Welcome to Victoria Rumble Room, an island show that really tries to cast its mighty lens around the country, and I think we do a fairly good job week in, week out. I'm Robin Adair, and this is our New Year's show. This is our New Year's show, so we're kind of excited about ringing in 2024 and taking a look at the tea leaves, about what we can expect for this coming year. Joining me, as always, is John Jurisic, my co-host with the most, and John, right off the top, we've had lots of viewer mail during the holidays.
Clearly, people have time to watch and write, as well as eat and drink. I hope they're doing that as well. We've taken shots at Justin Trudeau throughout our tenure in the Rumble Room, especially over the last little while, because you know what? He's losing the plot, Robin, from someone who's voted for him now two times. He's stumbling from problem to problem without any solutions. That annoys me. I don't care if you're blue, black, red, green, blue, whatever you want to be. At least say something and do it. Some of our viewers think that we attack too much. Have you looked at our title lately? And Pierre Poilievre doesn't offer a very good alternative.
And, you know, not to say that we don't actually take shots at Pierre Poilievre as well on occasion. We weren't thrilled about the way he behaved around that whole trucker dispute. Mm-hmm. 2024 is going to be a BC election year, and you can already feel the way that federal politics, people like Pierre Poilievre and Justin Trudeau, are influencing that provincial vote. You only have to look at the rise of the tiny BC Conservative Party and how people are saying, well, I'm not voting Liberal, even though, of course, it's now the BC United. They don't make a big differential about federal and provincial politics. So it gets a little confusing. And, you know, the narrative is being expressed by people who are writing us, including Tom, who says, in defense of Trudeau and against Pierre Poilievre, he says, meet Pierre Poilievre, the boy who cried scandal. The We Charity and claims that Trudeau is corrupt, but a commission exonerated him.
Thank you, Tom. There was a cry out when the pandemic first arrived. Gosh, that's a few years ago. That the Liberals had failed to make good on vaccine orders. But Tom writes, in reality, vaccine shortages were global and all procurement levels were met. Tom reflects a large number of Canadians who still lean Liberal and see the rise of inflation and problems with the supply chain as global problems. And in these cases, yeah, it's a good point.
He makes some good points. I would think most people aren't that comfortable with the way that Justin Trudeau has comported himself on the international stage, which is very different than the way people thought about Pierre Elliott Trudeau. He was always praised for the way he could maneuver with the big national leaders across the globe. However, my big problem with Justin Trudeau, in my opinion, is he tends to play up to the woke movement all too much. The idea that most Canadians are guilty of exploiting the environment and the poor, and in particular, the Indigenous community, it's just not black and white like that. And we're not all colonists and settlers. There is something that is really inspiring about being a Canadian, and yet there are those who really don't respect or like Canadian values.
All right. I won't get into that. However, over this past month, we've been running a series of comments from Mark Milkey, author and PhD who heads the Aristotle Foundation think tank. We asked him why Canadians are being told that our society and our values are wrongheaded.
Well, we live in an anti-reality age. When people say we're a racist country, institutionally racist country, that's anti-reality. Canada in 2023 is not Alabama in 1923. It's not San Francisco in the early 1900s where, you know, whites wouldn't allow those of Chinese ethnicity to come into their hospitals. That was institutional racism. So it's anti-reality to claim we live in an institutionally racist country in 2023. It's simply factually wrong. We're anti-history these days, or some people are. To say John A. Macdonald was genocidal puts him on the level of Hitler and Stalin. No, actually, John A. Macdonald you know, actually tried to help indigenous peoples. But he was a man of his age. He had views that were pretty imperial and not always pleasant. But that was 1867. And finally, I would say, you know, we're also, we live in an anti-responsibility age where everybody blames someone else for their own issues, right? So when the Supreme Court of Canada lets off a guy on a sexual assault charge because he was too drunk to know what he was doing, what happens to responsibility? So I think these are the three problems of our age: anti-reality, anti-nuanced history is the best way to put it, and anti-responsibility.
So we have lots and lots of feedback from our beloved viewers on this whole issue of Canada's identity. And here's a fairly typical comment. It comes from James, who writes, "The colonizer settler claims are just another attempt to create guilt so the purveyors can extort something. Pulling down statues and renaming streets is the work of totalitarians who want to rewrite history."
Pretty strong stuff. But, you know, defacing national monuments does not sit well with a lot of people, including me. Let's shift a bit and talk about what's coming up in 2024. Hey, a brand new year is upon us. You and I, Robin, are getting younger by the moment. Will times be better in the year ahead? We contacted top financial advisor David Schneider. He's pulled out his crystal ball, so let's zoom him in. Well, now joining us in the Victoria Rumble Room, once again, is David Schneider, senior investment advisor at Schneider Wealth Management. Great to have you back, and Happy New Year, David.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Glad to be on the show. And thank you for what you're doing for the community, the two of you. Well done.
Yeah, we're having way, way too much fun and actually learning a ton of things as well. Hey, look, we are all wondering about what 2024 is going to look like. Are we in for a prolonged economic slowdown? What's your analysis? You know, I was going to ask you, what's the meaning of life? But instead, I was going to let's just get you tell us what's going to happen in 2024.
Well, look how things can change. A year ago, everyone's worrying about we're going to have inflation forever. And now the bond market's saying we're having deflation, stagflation scenarios. So we've had a tremendous move in the bond market, 60 to 80 point basis points move on the downside. The bond market's always ahead of the stock market. And we're just seeing the fact is that interest rates are coming down. Reality is the economy is slowing. And this worry about higher rates is not happening anymore. So the only thing that's happening is the damage of these higher rates we're just starting to get in this community and elsewhere. But it's obvious just with the economic data, we're getting a significant slowdown right across the board here in Canada and globally as well.
So great to have you on the show again, David. And we do have a lot of questions to ask around the economy and around the issues that are percolating out there. The Bank of Canada has held its lending rate to the banks to 5%. And as you say, there's a lot of indications that they are going to look at actually lowering the rate in the new year, because right now we have a situation where we have the credit debt in Canada reaching $113 billion, total consumer credit rising to $2.4 trillion. It looks like a lot of people are having trouble paying their mortgages or will be in the short term. In 2024, are we going to see a lot of people missing those mortgage payments, those deadlines, and losing their homes?
Yeah, I think we're already seeing it, Robin. A couple of weeks ago, one of my friends is part of a Leeds club. They have two very experienced, well-established real estate professionals in their group. They're always talking about what's going on. And 2-3 weeks ago, they saw a huge spike. People locally that just could not make payments anymore. They couldn't redo their mortgage, hence they have to sell. The real estate agents go, it's not a good time to sell in November, early December, but they have to. So that's why the listings are going up. We're starting to see the pain, and it's obvious here in town, just in the last few weeks.
All right, let's stick with real estate a little bit here. An industry that I understand and have some experience with. What do you think? Because we've got to get you going, David, here. What do you think of the BC government's move to fast track duplexes, fourplexes, and apartments to make housing more affordable? The public, especially young families and young people, are outraged that they're being squeezed out of housing. Is this new NDP strategy and others the best answer to our housing crisis?
I think there's some good answers. This pre-approved, pre-masked, process that's been pushed for many years by some real estate professionals is coming about. I actually applaud what they're doing because it makes sense. So much of that zoning, so much of those questions that the municipal deal with getting things approved. So this would fast track things that would help tremendously. So yeah, it's, you know, it's great. But 8-12 months later, things have changed because the real estate situation has changed dramatically because of cost factors, because where we are in interest rates, there's no development happening anymore, both on the rental side and the strata side. Decided before this presentation to talk to a number of developers, and it was nice to see someone write in the TC a couple of days ago. The numbers just don't make sense, both from a rental complex where they get some benefits with a 50-year amortization to building, it just doesn't make sense. So that's why I think they say there's just 2 to 3 towers left in Victoria to be built. Wood construction's done next summer. Like there's just nothing happening. So they've come up with some good initiatives, but the one thing the government can't do anything about is interest rates and global prices. And it doesn't make sense for developers to build anything right now. So
we're
really,
I think we're going to see that that big project though that is being worked on so hard by Ken Mariash and has been worked on for 20 years almost, it seems, since they started initially trying to get something going at the Roundhouse. I think that's going to go through. That's going to be a lot of buildings. There's a lot of construction projected for that.
Yeah, I think that's one construction, but you need it right across the peninsula, and it's not happening. And what's really interesting is the Bill 44 that's come out. Where people that own properties now during good times where all of a sudden they get higher assessment fees because all of a sudden it's zoned for a 10-story building. And now because if you're near a bus stop, you're near a train line LRT system in Vancouver, all of a sudden these assessment values are going to go through the roof for people that own land. And unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of people challenge these assessments. Because all of a sudden a $10 million property goes to $25 million, but there's no ability to develop. And you see 4th Street in Vancouver, 4th Street in Victoria, there's problems. And you see these areas decaying because, you know, real estate, the retailers can't pay for the higher taxes that they have to pass upon. So it's a real issue because, you know, the things that have changed, it would have been great to have this 2 years ago when things were going well. But now it's the timing. The government can't do anything about global interest rates. So it's going to be a challenge out there. And you're going to see a lot of challenges to these assessments coming up. And so a bunch of lawyers and a bunch of consultants are going to be very, very busy, Robin.
But the timing, I think, has a lot to do with the upcoming election in 2024. And the BC government's talking about 54,000 new units, a lot of them low cost, low rental and low cost houses for people to live in or condominiums or apartments, as it were. Also, of course, duplexes, fourplexes, sixplexes. And they're talking about 6-12% drop in the cost of homes over the next 5 years. And that's going to be part of their strategy and their reelection campaign this coming year. David Eby's already talking about it. And when you look at the fact that they can't really campaign on the healthcare system and solving the doctor shortage, because that's not happening, they can't really campaign in a big way on solving crime downtown or drug addiction or mental illness. Housing's kind of it, so they're gonna carry that torch as hard as they can, and they're gonna point to successes where they have them.
Wish them good luck. You know, we want better housing. We need it for our young people. We need it for all residents in this community. It's not gonna happen. Like, it's stopped. This real estate situation has stopped, and people are gonna realize that. And until rates come down, until costs come down, it's going to be an issue. And one of the big is interest rate. And the one thing that's now being pushed upon, and the media is getting better and better, whether it goes back to Paul Volcker's comments 40 years ago, cut the government spending. And what we have in Canada is a huge level of spending at the federal, provincial, and municipal side. And I think more and more economists are coming out, more and more people are saying, you've got to cut the spending because that's such a big of the inflation issue. So, you know, the rate costs are coming down, but right now it's tough for developers with capital. And right now, bankers, there is no pre-sales in Vancouver. Like, there's nothing. So you can't get a project going. And then rental numbers just do not make sense. And it looks like in Ottawa, they're not changing the immigration system and the numbers. And guess where people love coming to? BC. So it's going to be a challenge.
So we're shifting now from housing to a more federal perspective, some more climate-related stuff. Okay. There's tug-of-war now going on between Western provinces like Alberta and Saskatchewan and the feds. Both Edmonton and Regina are saying they want the carbon tax scrapped and won't allow federal interference with resource development. Do you think decentralization would adversely or positively affect Canada's economic future?
Well, it's a really interesting bun fight going on between Danielle and Scott with our people in Ottawa. About a year and a half ago, my Alberta contact said the provincial government's going to do a new strategy. I go, what's that? They're going to just do things and let the government say, okay, come and sue us, versus the other way around where the provinces would go to court. Now they're just doing what they think they can do and allow the feds to go to court on their side and let time go by. So when you have two people that are very like-minded, Scott Moe and Danielle Smith, and getting a lot of support, they are thinking what they want to do best for their province. And then Danielle Smith's speech last week with respect to having responsible and reliable energy in their province, she basically said, Ottawa, like, go away. She wants to take care of her people, and she's getting applauded for it. So it's a really interesting where you have these two premiers with so much power because the resource base of those two economies are massive. And Ottawa knows that. So it's going to be an interesting challenge between the two. And I got to tell you, these two are really showing to the business community that they mean business. And their different strategy was, okay, we're doing it. Come sue us, versus them going to courts to Ottawa. So that's what you're seeing, the strategy. And this past couple of weeks, you're seeing it all. So it's going to be interesting to watch.
We're going to shift again to something a little more local. I think it's local in most of our cities. We'll focus on Victoria for a minute. I talked to a leading member of the downtown business community who's also very locked in with the tourism industry as well. And what I heard from this individual is that more and more downtown business is so dependent on the cruise ship industry. In the old days, it was depicted that the cruise ship industry was the icing on the cake of business downtown. And what I'm hearing now is that business downtown, they see that the cruise ship industry has become the cake because there's a lot fewer people working downtown. People are staying away from downtown to shop more and more often. There's the crime issues, the break and enters. We just had a massive arrest number for break and enters and shoplifting downtown. If it's not safe, people don't want to be there, and we need to turn this atmosphere around. Do you think 2024 is the start of doing something significant about that?
There's going to be some interesting challenges with this. This Airbnb decision with respect to providing accommodations for tourists, this is going to be interesting in Victoria, Vancouver, especially the Okanagan. That's what everyone is talking about right now, going, oh my goodness, there's no place for tourists to come. With respect to the tourists or to the cruise line business, yeah, it's significant to Victoria. I am learning that because of new guidelines with the cruise line business, those stays in Victoria are shorter because they have to come in at a slower speed. So those 8-hour stays are 4 to 6 hours, just little technical stuff. So that means those trips to Bouchard Gardens are curtailed, things like that. Oh, it is so important. And because of the cost factor coming in, we're already starting to see some of the required Canadian destination stops go to Prince Rupert, actually, and not come to Victoria. And I think, just to keep you in mind, I think it was 23 years ago, Vancouver had 100% of the Alaska Cruise Line traffic flow. Okay. Vancouver. Seattle surpassed it in the last 18 months. So Seattle's now more than 50% of the Alaska Cruise Line, because a big component of the cost factor is how you get there, train, bus, plane, accommodations before and after. And what we're finding now is the cost factor in Vancouver has gone through the roof. And this is before the Airbnb factor, before the Taylor Swift concerts. So this is something to watch. But you're right, Robin. When you have the crime situation, you don't have the shops. The two of you know how many businesses, longtime businesses, downtown Victoria that have gone to Oak Bay or uptown or Sydney. You know, it's sad. So,
David, let me end this interview here with where we started. So I asked you what 2024 might be looking like for folks. Let's look at it more from an investor point of view now. With a potential, who knows? We thought we'd have a soft economy. We didn't. So whatever kind of economy there is in 2024, is this a good time for investors to put their money in to the stock market, wherever, and improve their bottom line?
I think the one thing that's different from a year ago is that we're starting to see a significant change in the interest rate outlook. When you had continual interest rate increases, one thing you have in Canada, the big component of the TSX is dividend yielding investments, the banks, the insurers, the pipelines, the telcos, the REITs, so forth. They got continually hit through 2023 because rates kept going higher. And then you got people selling, and then people selling those balance funds at the banks, those income funds at the banks that are just so huge. So we had net redemptions. What I've seen in the last month, that stopped. And that is why you're seeing the banks, the telcos, some of the pipelines starting to have some nice rallies, because you've got dividend yields on these investments that are second to none. And Canada right now is so cheap compared to other markets. It's just being actually just ignored, not only by international investors, but there was articles this past couple of weeks about pension funds in Canada that just have so little in Canada. You know, they're investing globally. So the one thing that's nice about Canada, and there's a lot of retired clients that I deal with, that my colleagues deal with, are retired people that want simple dividend income. The one thing great about Canada is super well-regulated industries that are oligopolies. There's only three telcos. There's five big banks. You know, there's about four good pipelines. They're not going to build any more pipelines. And they're in really good shape. And they're run extremely well. So that's the nice thing about it. The corporate Canada is in really good shape. And I just hope to goodness that all three levels of government start getting a lot of pressure and we start seeing some spending decreases on the government side. That will help tremendously on interest rates and tremendously on the inflation concerns that we had. So it's nice to see the pressure. And you two guys are the biggest ones out there to provide pressure. So, you know, keep on it. But congratulations for another great year at Rumble Room. What you do is so valuable. We have so many issues in Victoria. We care so much in the community. And as I was telling you before, as the prelude, I go back to a 1984 presentation by Milton Friedman at Stanford. And I'm actually going to put it on my LinkedIn page, because he said to the students, it's not the government's responsibility, but the people's responsibility. How do we respond to this responsibility most effectively to our fellow man? There's never been in history a more effective machine dealing with poverty is through free enterprise system and the free markets. And he went back to the late 1990s, early 2000s, where the economies are extremely good and all those social issues came down dramatically because the economy was taking care of things. So I think we talked about earlier, there's going to be the big thing in BC is going to be the debate on some of these clean tech initiatives and doing things and getting costs down to really help our economy, because then things start taking care of itself when the economy's better. And unfortunately, things have to get really bad before it gets better, but I think we're starting to get better.
So our New Year's show is nearly complete. Again, we want to thank the nearly 1.6 million people who have viewed the Rumble Room since we got this project started about 2.5 years ago. We appreciate that people tune in and hear what we have to say and meet our guests. And hopefully, maybe this gives you lots of food for thought as we dig into these issues in this coming year. And I think that we are also going to have some interesting reporting ahead on the BC election for 2024. I look forward to that.
There's a ton of things that are going to happen in 2024. At some point, I will weekly be going, oh my God, how can we cover all this news? That's what I've been doing for a couple of years with you, which is just fabulous. I love doing the show. Anyway, my New Year's resolution, because I know everyone wants to know that, is to keep on biking. But interestingly enough, if you have an e-bike, oh, I do, you know, you kind of have to learn how to stay on it. I've fallen down over half a dozen times on my e-bike. So my New Year's resolution is not only to keep on biking, but to stay alive.
And John, my New Year's resolution, just so you know, is to continue to rumble on.